Good afternoon, Muskegon. Hi, this is Greg Roberts. The show is turning to your show for news, information, and more on Facebook, on radio, you name it. We're here. Let's get Pastor Mervin Burns. What's going on, buddy?
My brother, good afternoon.
A lot. I just wanted to tell people, if you would like to see this show, maybe you're driving and you would like to catch it, you can catch it on 103.7 The Beat or M106. Also, you can catch us on the Emoji Act app, which goes worldwide. Okay, so our shows repeat themselves. If you didn't see last week's show, I please recommend that you go back to see this show. Yes. Have you heard any comments? One of the strangest comments I heard, it's making an impact. And what we're talking about is uncomfortable. And what we decided to do is talk about put it this way, the things that we don't like to touch, we don't want to touch them. It ain't nobody business.
Yeah,
but it's impacting our community, and we're talking about people that are being molested. Today we get to talk to a great organization, the Child Abuse Council, and you know, are you ready to get to it?
Let's get to it.
Okay, you get to introduce the guest today.
Okay, all right. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
All right. All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we're going to continue our series on uncomfortable conversations. We're excited to have our guests from the Child Abuse Council. We have Kayleen G. and Christina Kolgetsky. Good afternoon.
I knew it was going to catch one of us. I knew it was going to catch one of us.
I had it in my head. It just didn't quite roll off my tongue. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you start off? Why don't you tell folks a little bit about what the Child Abuse Council is and what you each do there?
Sure. The Child Abuse Council of Muskegon County has been in this community since 1975. We started as a prevention programming agency out in the schools teaching kids how to keep themselves safe. In 1997, we added on the programs of Children's Advocacy Center, which deals primarily with child victims of sexual abuse. And we also added the CASA program, which stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocate. And that program trains community volunteers to advocate for the best interests of kids as they work their way through the abuse and neglect system in court. Today, as we sit here, the agency is still comprised of those three programs. We have 9 staff, including myself, and we serve over 21,000 kids every year in the Muskegon community. My role here currently is I'm the executive director.
Now, how long have you been in the executive director? How long have you been with the program? It's extensive.
It is. I started as a CASA volunteer in 1997, and I did that for 5 years. In 2003, I came on as the CASA director and did that for 10. And then I have been the executive director of the agency for the last 9 years.
Congratulations. And we appreciate what you do in the community. Christina, looking at your bio, you have an interesting bio other than being a Lions fan. I'm sorry, I had to go there. Okay.
Talk about abuse, yeah.
Yeah, talk about abuse. Talk about suffering, no. Christina, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So raised in West Michigan, I graduated from Grand Haven High School. I went and got my undergrad from Baker College in Human Services. Took a little bit of time off to be a mom, and then decided that I really wanted to do something impactful, and to do the job that I am in as a clinician. I had to go back for my master's degree. So worked, got my master's degree. I did an internship with ACAC in another county. Fell in love with the idea of families coming to one place and getting everything that they need. The child comes in for an interview. Law enforcement is here. CPS, if they're on the case, is here. So the child is only telling their story once, and everybody is hearing the same story. Mm-hmm. and then they can come through in whether it's counseling. We go to court with families, whether they are clients or not, if they need extra people of support there. We have a few different counseling programs or models that we use. So absolutely fell in love with the idea of one place for the family to come, and then graduated with my master's. And thankfully there was an opening and Kylene took a chance on a new graduate. And I've been here for about a year and a half as a clinician.
Okay, let's get right to it. Kaylin, tell us, let's break down the facts of sexual abuse with children. Okay. By the numbers.
The numbers, yeah. So in Muskegon County, on average, just to give you an idea, we will do approximately 400 interviews in a year, all within this community of children who have been alleged to have been sexually abused. These kids, there's no particular racial lines, there's no particular zip code, there's no particular religion. The sexual abuse knows no bounds. It's a little different than physical abuse and neglect, but it is here. People don't like to talk about it, as you mentioned, but it is happening here. And I think the thing that we want people to know is, you know, there is help for that. If it goes untreated, these children will grow into adults who are far more likely to be homeless, be involved in the criminal system, be involved with abuse and neglect. And that cost, you know, on average over the nation, you know, for the lifetime of a child who's been abused, you're talking about, you know, upwards of $592 billion. Not to mention that, you know, if it's left untreated, that, you know, those adults may not be living as healthy and as happy or effective life as they would want to be.
So you said you do 400 interviews. So if that's 400 interviews, there's a lot more that you guys are not getting a chance to talk to.
Correct. You know, statistics show, the latest statistics show one in six girls, and I believe it's one in four boys, will be sexually abused by the time they're 18. But we really feel that those numbers are much higher because so often these cases go unreported.
Hold up. One in six with girls.
Yeah.
One in how many with boys?
I believe the current number is four.
Now most people would think that it would be higher for girls than boys, which I'm so, and is that, everybody get what to talk about? Is that sort of that whole stigma about not reporting boys? And we had a discussion last week with a guest, but that number, just most people think that number would be higher for girls than boys.
So, and I might have said those backwards. It's been a long week. Yeah, the number of girls reporting is definitely higher.
Okay.
And there is that stigma. Boys will often either they feel they have to be the tough, rough, you know, guys, that's not going to hurt me. They don't want to be associated with, if I was sexually abused, people are automatically going to assume I'm gay. You know, just different things that these kids face in an already tumultuous school system and society that we have right now, which is very tough on teens.
Wow.
It's going to be heavy. Stick with us. Okay. This is Christina. Okay. Why should we just catch this and deal with this immediately? Instead of waiting for longer. Kaylin talked about it a little bit, but why?
It's really important to address it as children or as early as you can after the abuse happens, because like Kylene said, if it's left untreated, it can lead to a lot of mental health concerns, physical concerns. A lot of the time I will kind of use the analogy of like a cut. If a cut is left untreated, there's a chance that, you know, it could get infected, it could turn ugly and nasty, and it could hurt. Whereas if it's treated, you know, with medicine or therapy, it'll heal and maybe it won't leave you with such a noticeable scar. So that kind of helps kids kind of put it into perspective. But a lot of adults that don't deal with it as children or teenagers, you know, when it happens, they turn to drugs and alcohol and make poor choices because they didn't have those people in their corner as children that said, you know, I believe you, I support you, let's talk about it, let's work through this, you know, let's put the bad person behind bars if, you know, if able to. So, and we find that sometimes with adults that have gone through it, that haven't processed through it, when they have kids, sometimes they miss those signs. They don't want to believe it. Like, nope, I know what happened to me. It's not happening to my child. And before you know it, there's a pattern of, oh, my grandma was abused, my mom was abused, I was abused. So as much as it's a hard topic to talk about, and a lot of parents say it's uncomfortable to talk about, it is uncomfortable to talk about. But the fact is, our children are being hurt. So we want to talk about it before the abuse happens.
Kellyanne, our guest last week said, hurt people hurt other people. How true is that?
It can't people- now a myth that a lot of people believe is if you were abused, you're going to abuse. And that's not the case. Just because one person is abused doesn't mean they're going to abuse. There are people that have never been abused that abuse children. And there are children that have grown up being abused that don't abuse. So that is probably one of the biggest myths that I hear, is I have parents that come in and say, okay, my child was abused, are they not going to abuse? And that's not the case.
Kellyanne, would you like to add to that?
I agree with everything that Christina is saying. The other thing is that, you know, these kids, what we have to remember, while this is a very difficult subject, kids are extremely resilient. And with that proper intervention and that proper treatment, they can grow up to be healthy and happy. Intervention is very important. I don't want to sugarcoat the fact that when a child does tell, some really drastic changes can happen in their life, and they're not always fun. You know, it's not a perfect system. The system is designed at its core to help these kids. But, you know, we have a prevention program. So we're out in the schools, every single school in Muskegon County, Head Start through high school, teaching age-appropriate personal safety lessons and what to do if you're being harmed. Okay, so a child hears that disclosure or hears that presentation, decides to finally tell, and then what happens to them from there? A lot of times they get removed from their home, you know, so they feel they've done something bad, where the system's saying, we got to get you out of that situation. So now they've moved, they get placed with people they don't know. The family's torn apart. There could be family members that don't believe them or that blame them. So there's a lot of guilt and shame that can also come onto these kids. Mm-hmm. And so aside from just the normal trauma of the abuse that happened, you've got all of this other stuff snowballing, that is so important to have that intervention and help to help, you know, process that.
Melvin?
Tell me where you all come into process. Is it, you said you do one interview with social workers. Is it a referral, like a police officer thinks there's been abuse? Where do you get engaged in the process?
Okay. So we are, the Child Abuse Council is a private nonprofit. So we are not affiliated with, you know, law enforcement or under the state guidelines. The way it would typically work is somebody in the community will call into Children's Protective Services and make a report of suspected child abuse or neglect. Okay. What then happens is CPS and or law enforcement, whoever is involved in that case, brings that child here to our center. Okay. We are equipped with two interview rooms as well as a separate observation room. Okay. The idea behind it being that a children's advocacy center is a safe, child-friendly place for a child to be interviewed. Okay. Prior to centers like ours existing, kids would get interviewed in the back of a police car. They would get interviewed again at the ER. They would get interviewed again by CPS and possibly further traumatizing this child. Sure. They come here. It's a very friendly facility. They get interviewed. So we're kind of that tool in the investigation. We don't have a part legally in the investigation, but we are what help law enforcement and CPS get that information from the child that they need to proceed.
Oh, two questions. The first question is they say that usually when someone is abused by someone they know, number one. And number two, they say, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, is that a lot of people ignore what they might obviously see or have been told.
Yes. So on the first comment, yes, the majority of children who are sexually abused, it's not the stranger in the park, that takes them away. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be someone close to them, whether that's a relative, a coach, a trusted friend, it's somebody that has a role in that child's life. Now, that's not to say that we don't get in cases where it's been a complete stranger and that happens, but they are way far and few in between. As far as people ignoring it, yeah, we see that. It's a difficult subject for people. I can't begin to try and estimate what's going through their mind when they make that decision. I know that in a lot of times, the abuser might be what holds that family together financially, what holds that family together with a prominence within society. When a disclosure like this comes out, that world pretty much falls apart for a while. And while we're here to kind of, us and our, professional peers are here to kind of help put those pieces back together, the fact of the matter is life will never be the same for those families. So we do see families who do not believe the child. It's torn families apart. And it's really sad. And so then, our therapists have to then really work extra hard with those children to make sure, like, hey, this is not your fault. You did the right thing.
Christine, talk about some of the signs and symptoms that we should look out for.
Oh, that's good. So there are a lot of different symptoms. So one is withdrawn. If you have a kiddo that is normally out there and full of energy and, wants to be seen and all of that, and all of a sudden they are pulling back. They want to be alone. They don't want to interact with peers when they used to like to interact with peers. If all of a sudden there is a big behavior change where they're overly aggressive, they're yelling. Another one that we see a lot of is potty training regression, having accidents, not wanting to sleep in their bed, not wanting to be alone, shying away from family members or friends that they might have not before. So I don't want to go over to grandpa's house anymore when they used to love to go to grandpa's house. Changes in behavior at school. So there are a lot of different things that you can look out for. The biggest one is going to be is just if you know the child, you know that child. So if there is something up, have that conversation. Be like, hey, like I noticed, you're not the same Kylene that you were. Like what's going on, So just being aware of, how that child is reacting and not brushing it off as, oh, it's probably just a bad day or, oh, I'm just noticing something. Like really pay attention.
Pastor Burns.
Christine, I'm going to kind of follow up with that. Help our listeners today. This is difficult for parents. And again, part of it is just not wanting to believe it, whether it's our kids or nieces or nephews. Give us just some ideas of how we engage in this whole conversation if we have some concerns.
So I recommend starting young, when they are young, having those conversations about who is allowed to look at our private parts, touch our private parts. Have those conversations during bath time. Go over, okay, yep, this is your vagina, this is your penis, and please, parents, name it with the proper terms. Don't.
Thank you.
I don't know how many times we've had kids come in and call it a cookie or a flower and like give it the real name. And I have parents that are like, it's hard to use those words. Like we don't like to use those words. Well, when it comes down to it, if your child is being touched, we need to know where they're being touched.
Exactly.
If they go to school and say, oh, my uncle touched my cookie last night, the teachers can be like, oh, okay, like, sorry that the cookie, like, they don't know.
Exactly.
So really giving those technical terms and having those conversations a lot, like talking about trusting your gut. Like, our gut is the number one. So if somebody is making you feel uncomfortable, says something that makes you feel uncomfortable, speak up. Whether you tell a trusted adult or you tell that person, like, that really made me feel uncomfortable. And just checking in, how are you doing? Like, I think for kids, a lot of the time is they're afraid to talk to their parents because of how the parents are going to react.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's having that tough conversation, or are they going to believe me? Or, you know, if I tell them that it was dad that's sneaking into my room at night, like Kylene was explaining, well, what is that going to do to their world? Like, dad's going to be removed. The child could be removed. So just having conversations. I mean, it doesn't have to be this sit down and this very firm conversation, like, tell me what's going on. Have you been touched? But just letting the child know, like, hey, you know that if anything makes you feel uncomfortable, you can come to me, right? Let's talk about this. You know, like, how was your day? Or if you notice that after a family get together or a party or something, your child is acting a little differently, be like, hey, like, what's going on? Was something said that made you uncomfortable? Did somebody make you uncomfortable? Not interrogate, but just have those open communications. That way, if something does happen, they feel like they can come to you and talk to you.
Kevin, with the numbers increasing of these kind of cases, but funding is down. Do you see that funding is down for organizations like yourself?
I think that any nonprofit in Muskegon, and certainly across the country, mm-hmm. but particularly those that deal with child welfare, they're the least funded. They're completely under, you know, almost always underfunded, mm-hmm. and they're the first to get cut. As that, you know, those numbers rise and the need for services rise, that money is not always there. Our agency, we do live in a very giving community. We get money from federal and state and local grants, but we also make up about 31% of our operating budget from fundraising and donations from individuals in our community. And that's huge. So even for people who may not want to, you know, be faced with it day to day, like, you know, Christina and I and the rest of our staff are, this is a way they can also get involved, you know, support a fundraiser or write a check. But child welfare in general across the country is way underfunded.
But how much more could you do instead of a staff of 9 if you had a staff of 18 or 36 in a county of 180,000 plus people?
You know, we do. I will start off by saying I call my team mighty but little. We do a whole lot with the staff that we have. And so we do, you know, kind of meet that need. Would it help the workloads a little bit if we had double the team? Yeah, certainly. But right now we do what it takes to get the job done. Nobody comes to this agency to work here for the money. We are a nonprofit. We all could make 2 or 3 times more elsewhere in the for-profit world. And it's certainly not for the fame. So you come here because of the mission, and
right.
That's what draws you here. And that's what, you know, every day we come in and we're like, all right, whatever it takes, we're going to get it done today. Our prevention program that's out in, I just kind of wanted to follow up with what Christina said, along with families talking to their kids, you know, our prevention team goes out, and I'd mentioned that they're in every school every year. Mm-hmm. Because historically we've seen that kids need to hear our message 2 or 3 times before they will actually disclose. And so we want to make sure we're there when they do. We also do mandated reporter training in the schools, because the biggest travesty in my mind that can happen is if a child finally gets that courage, they get that courage and they tell someone, whether it's a school social worker, a teacher, a principal, and that person doesn't do anything with it. You know, these are these lost children. So it's important, you know, to be out there and be ready for them. We're seeing now where kids will tell for their friends. They'll be like, you know, we heard this message and, you know, Johnny's been telling me that he's being hurt at home, but he won't tell. So I'm going to tell for him. So it's getting, you know, that message out there and letting kids know it's okay to get help.
Pastor Burns.
Your prevention training, do you do it with other groups? I was in a group of pastors about 2 weeks ago, And of course, this is something in our group. We, you know, we've talked about this area, you know, our own things we do to protect ourselves. But, you know, in our congregations, in our groups, and probably other professions, does any training you do for groups like that?
Yes. So our prevention program has the training for the children, but we also were the first in the state to bring in the Stewards of Children training, which comes out of the Darkness to Light organization down south. This program goes out to anybody in the community that would like to learn, and it's talking about teaching you the five steps to keeping children safe. So it's going to walk you through signs to look for, what to do if you suspect a child is being this. And then it's very practical things like, you know, Pastor Burns, maybe you have a child that you take for guitar lessons. It's when you go in before you drop them off, you find out where those guitar lessons are going to take place. Is it a closed room? Is there a window? Are there other people around? It's making those types of, you know, everyday decisions that sometimes we just don't think about. That training, we go out and give that to anybody who would like to get it. Right now, between last year and between 2020 and right now, we've been out doing it with all of the school personnel from superintendents on down. We do private organizations. We will basically tell any, we'll train anybody who would like to get it, because remember, it really does. They say it takes a, you know, a community to raise a child. It takes a community to raise, to keep children safe. And while we're in the schools and we can teach a child all day long how to keep themselves safe, ultimately, it's our responsibilities as adults to ensure that that child is safe. So yes, we do offer that.
Christina, I'm an adult, okay? Talk to adults. Like you said, you don't need to sit down and be heavy-handed, but you just were told by your daughter's son that maybe dad or even mom touched you in a inappropriate place. Talk to that parent or that coach or that teacher, how they should act.
So the best way is to try to remain as calm as possible. So kids tend to give little nuggets of information and kind of judge how that person is going to take the information. So try to remain as calm as you can, even though on the inside you might be freaking out. Try to remain calm and say, you know, thank you for telling me. You know, that must have been really hard to tell me. You know, I believe you, you know, and try to, you know, it's not your fault. Remind them that it's not your fault, that adults make choices and you're a child. So no part of what happened is your fault. And then just obviously report it, and then just keep reminding the child that, like, you know, I'm here if you want to talk about it. You know, again, I believe you. Thank you so much for telling me. You know, that must have been hard. But really just trying to remain as calm as possible, because if, as a parent, coach, whatever, trusted adult, if you freak out, that's going to cause the child to shut down and know that you're not a safe adult to talk to.
So for some of your adults like me that would have went and grabbed a baseball bat, did you hear what she said? Remain calm and listen to it. How important is that that kid absolutely knows that it was not their fault? This is both question for both of you.
So it doesn't matter how many times they hear it. I still have kids that come in and say, but it is my fault. And they have their reasons. Like, I didn't stop it. I didn't tell sooner. He told me not to tell and I told. You know, if there were threats, like, well, he said he was going to hurt my mom if I said anything.
Oh, I broke up the family.
Yep. You know, it's my fault. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had siblings come in and say, you know, like, it's her fault that our family isn't together because she told on dad. And now dad's in jail, and, you know, we have to live with grandma. Or, you know, if mom was a stay-at-home mom or dad is a stay-at-home parent and the other parent is now in jail, that's a loss of income. You lose your income. That can be your home, you know, your toys, or like Kylie said, sometimes the child has to be removed because it is unsafe. When you have unsupportive and unbelieving caregivers, unfortunately, it's that child that is removed. So again, it's my fault. I don't get to be with my family because I told.
Kevin?
Yeah, I would echo everything that, you know, Christina is saying, and to try and help some of these families. So if you, we have what is called a non-offending caregiver. So what that means is, let's say it's a mom-dad situation and mom was the perpetrator. Dad didn't know about it. Dad is a non-offending caregiver. So at the same time that that child is going through a really traumatic experience, mm-hmm. so is that dad, right? Like their whole world just came apart. So mm-hmm. from the moment they step into our facility and that child is going to be interviewed, we have family advocates who then do crisis intervention with that non-offending parent, walk them through, validate that, you know, their tears, that's normal, their anger, that's normal, that all of that is normal, and then kind of walk them through, you know, look, this is what's going to happen in the process. This is what you might see from your child in the coming weeks. We have counseling here for the non-offending caregiver and and siblings. We also have victim advocates. We will attend court hearings with them so we can, you know, connect them with other services we think they need. So it's important to know, you know, everybody in this family now is in trauma, and the stages of trauma are very much like the stages of grief. And so you need to understand that going into it, that this parent is not yelling at us because they're mad at us. They're yelling because they don't know what else to do, and they're angry that this has happened. And mm-hmm. so we really try and tackle both, you know, the child as well as that family that is experiencing this trauma.
I can't help but to tell our listeners and our watchers how important it is we going through physical abuse, how you can go through where you're middle class and all of a sudden you move to another town or state and you're poor. So these things absolutely do happen. Pastor Melvin Burns.
Two questions. One, with the families you're with, how long do you stay with them through the process? Is it, and do you do follow-up, I guess, after 18 or, I don't know, age out or whatever resolve there is to the case?
So once a child or family has come through our doors and they have become a client of ours, so that child and that family, non-offending caregivers, we do not mm-hmm. allow perpetrators in our building, as you can imagine, mm-hmm. but they become a client and are available, they are eligible for our services forever. Okay. So all the way up until they're 18, as you may or may not know, with trauma, you might have a good handle on it today, but maybe in a year or 3 years, you know, something happens, the perpetrator gets out of jail or something in your life happens and it starts creeping up again. We welcome those families to call us back. We will assess at that time whether or not we are the right place for that child, or if we think they need to have counseling elsewhere. If an adult calls us, then we certainly help them. We can't treat adults here, adult victims per se, but we will make sure that we get referrals out to agencies that can help them. So we are right along with that process. So we will stay with that child until, if there's a court case, until that closes, you know, just to kind of follow them through that and be that consistent party. The other thing I would mention is that every single service that we provide here through our three programs at the agency is free. So we will never turn away a child or family because of their inability to pay. We don't charge insurances. We don't even ask that. We want this service to be available to all.
Wow. Pastor Burns, again, I'm stunned over here.
You know, our thing, ladies, has been, you know, for the past couple of weeks, you know, things we don't want to talk about, you know, and you know, God bless you for doing wonderful work. And, I think when people see the name Child Abuse Counselor, it's like, yeah, it's good, but I don't want to get too close to them because of what they do, you know. Let me ask you this. Do you advocate for any change to state or local level as far as policies?
Sure. Yeah. So I encourage my staff to be involved with different organizations in the community. We have representation on the Lakeshore Human Trafficking Task Force. We have mm-hmm. representation on the Community Collaborating Council. I serve on different legislative committees with some of our governing bodies. Mm-hmm. This year, I was fortunate enough to be appointed by Governor Whitmer to the Governor's Task Force on Child Abuse and Neglect. And at that level, mm-hmm. is where we really kind of try and affect change on a statewide level, whether it's both in services, how we do things, how we deal with these families. So, you know, it's something that's always evolving. There's always new. When I started, we had, you know, only one type of modality to follow for therapy. Now we have EMDR, we have TFCBT, we have trauma play therapy and all those things that, you know, Christina could talk about, but it's constantly evolving and changing. And we want to be right there at the forefront of it so that we can, you know, help these families with the most efficiency and effectiveness as we can.
Christina, talk about some of the therapies that she just mentioned.
Okay. So the most common one that all clinicians here at the Child Abuse Council use is TFCBT, which stands for Trauma-Focused Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. It's a mouthful. But with that is it's processing through those feelings and those negative cognitions that we have about the abuse. So it's learning healthy coping skills, how to identify when we're feeling certain feelings in our body and where we're feeling those in our body. It's about opening up about our story. There is a part in the process where the child or teenager can either write or somehow describe their journey to a trusted caregiver. A lot of times we see that a caregiver that comes in may not know the whole story or may not know a lot of what happened, but knows general bits and pieces. So that part of this process is that the child or teenager being able to fully disclose their story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we work on the more that we talk about it and acknowledge how we feel and all of those emotions and feelings towards the abuse, towards the abuser, towards anybody involved, the easier it gets. Because for a lot of it, it's, I just want to push it down. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk about it. Because if I talk about it, it brings up feelings and emotions. And I don't want to deal with that right now. Another modality that we use is play therapy. Children, they communicate through play. You know, they can't sit across from me and tell me how they're feeling. But if I put a sand tray down with figurines, I'm going to get a whole lot out of that or out of painting or baby dolls. It's astonishing what you can see when you put a baby doll in a child's hand, how some of them are nurturing and caring and other ones maybe just kind of throw the baby down or working with a dollhouse. So play therapy, a lot of times we think, oh, play therapy is for kids. It's actually beneficial with teenagers because teenagers don't like to talk, but you get a sand tray out and some figurines and they'll start to play and, you know, you just let them work it out and occasionally ask an open-ended question and kind of let them guide, you know, the conversation based on, you know, what they're playing with. Another modality that we have is PCIT, which is a parent-child interaction therapy. So that is more therapist and parent together where I'm teaching the parent how to interact with their child. We're not yelling, we're not screaming, we're not name calling. We are, you know, great job. Like learning to interact with their child to build that attachment. Kids need to feel that attachment to a caregiver. They need to feel like they have that trusted person that loves them, supports them, and that is going to be there no matter what. So that modality is more for parents that are struggling to interact with their child. Like, I don't know how to play with my child. Like, no, I have to cook. I have to clean. I have bills to pay. Like, I don't have time. So that one is more of teaching them how to interact with their child. And then the last one that I utilize is it's a phase-based treatment. And that is for children with sexualized behaviors, problematic sexualized behaviors. So we do see kids come through here for an interview that, you know, are acting out on other kids. Or, you know, recently it's been more of a, you know, my child is addicted to porn. Every time I go in the living room, it's on the tablet, the phone. And a lot of it starts out harmless. they were on YouTube, which is horrible for kids, because you start watching something that you think is appropriate and then it's a rabbit hole. And then all of a sudden you've got something and these kids, their brains don't understand. And then that causes kind of, they get curious. Oh, well, I saw this. And then, you know, little brother, little sister, neighbor boy, best friend, like, hey, I saw this video. Like, you know, that looks like they're having fun. Like, let's try it. And before you know it, it's problematic. So we do have that service where I work with the family and the child on kind of correcting those sexualized behaviors and increasing the desired behaviors and decreasing the problematic ones.
It's in the details, because I remember seeing a child draw a picture of a family, and on one side of the family was all color and flowers and stuff like that, and the other side of the family was just black and scribbles, and which told me something's not right with that side of the family. So it is in the details. Let's talk about details. Talk to our people that are watching and listening about paying attention to just the smallest details.
Yeah, so I would echo, you know, a lot of what Christina said earlier about what to look for. And the number one thing is listen to your child. Make sure that they know it's okay to talk. Pay attention to things they said. It is very, very common. What Christina said is that the kids will test the water. They might just release a little bit of detail to see what your reaction is. If you overreact, they're going to shut down and they're not going to tell the rest of it. And to believe your child, cases of where children make false accusations are really, really rare. And so we are of the mind that until we know differently, if a child has disclosed, we're going to believe that child until we have reason not to. Because those are pretty, you know, few and far between that a child is going to disclose something that they've made up. And in a lot of those cases, it's because there's somebody else who was feeding this child some information, whether it's for a custody case or, you know, something like that. So it's believe what that child is saying. The process, you know, the Child Abuse Council is the coordinating hub for what's called an MDT or the multidisciplinary team in Muskegon County. And so we have a protocol on how these cases are to be investigated. And the prosecutor's office signs off on it. DHHS signs off on it. Every law enforcement jurisdiction within our county signs off on it. And so they all are agreeing that, yeah, this is what we need to do. And that has safeguards in that are going to usually weed out things that might be false. So it's really important to just believe your child when you're going through this.
How, now you mentioned some, you said, I was just going to ask you that question, and this is to both of you. Is there a large number of the other parent grooming the kids to say that dad or mom molested me because the fights? Is that something that you says see on CSI or something like that, that a crime show, or does that really happen, or the numbers are low?
So that's a hard one to answer, because nobody really knows, right? If a parent is doing that, they don't usually go, oh, you got me. I, you know, coaxed my kid into saying this. Are there situations where when you're working that protocol the way it's supposed to be working, that, you know, you kind of come to the realization that, this sounds like it might be this. So does that happen? Yeah, that happens. It's not the majority of the cases that we see, but it does happen. But we can't sit here and look at that parent and go, we know you did that, you know? But that's a very unfortunate case, because even though this is a child-friendly facility, for a parent to pit a child against another child by making something up that is so horrific as, you know, sexual abuse by a parent, that is causing trauma to a child who probably was, you know, not experiencing anything until the situation arose. So, you know, parents kind of, some people just seem to lose their mind when they're going through a divorce and we're just focused on, oh, I got to get that, you know? we just really encourage people to come on, you know, let's not use the kids. Don't put the kids in the middle.
Great. Pastor Burns.
To both of you, I know you said this crosses all kind of racial, ethnic lines, economic lines, but are we seeing any types of trends? Christine, you'd mentioned like the kids exposed to YouTube, you know, once kids get on the internet, their world changes. Are we seeing any kind of trends either locally in the county or nationally with respect to child abuse?
So, you know, working here at the agency, we hate apps like Snapchat and, you know, all those things, TikTok, they're horrible. And because the reason they're horrible is because a person who knows how to prey on a child can do that very easily through those. That is a growing trend. Cell phones, you know, when I was in school and in these kids' age, we had a phone, it was attached to the wall, and you could only go as far as that cord reached, right?
I remember those days.
Yeah. You didn't have like a 30-foot cord. You only
And if you wanted to talk to your friends after school, you either had to walk to their house or you had to wait until the next day. Right. So, you know, oftentimes I think for as many advancements as we've made, that I wouldn't mind going back to that simpler time. We do have our prevention program is out teaching internet safety and anti-bullying and things like that in the school as well. We also have, are developing some of the programs here around internet safety to kind of teach that parent. Mm-hmm. As far as trends, you're correct in that sexual abuse knows no boundaries. Mm-hmm. Physical abuse and neglect, those rates happen 5 times more in a family that is lower in the socioeconomic class. And usually that's because they're already stressed based on, you know, everything they have to do, and they have limited resources, you know, to help with that. But that's not just here in Muskegon. That's everywhere, right? Poverty is everywhere. So, Christina, would you add anything?
No, I agree with a lot of what Kylene said. And unfortunately, there are a lot of kids and early teens that come in. And yeah, I met him on Snapchat and, you know, he said he was 17. I didn't know he was
37.
Yeah, right. Or another app is Discord, where these people will like play games online with kids, like Roblox and Minecraft and, you know, oh yeah, I'm 12 years old too. And like they build these relationships and these kids feel like they can trust them. And then they slowly work towards, you know, like, oh, you need that upgrade in your game. Well, I'll give it to you if you do this for me. And these kids are like, well, that's my friend, of course. Like they don't understand that it's harmful. And it starts out very innocent, like, you know, like, names and kids give way too much information and they are way too trusting, especially when it comes to the internet. Oh no, he's my friend. Like, it's okay. You know, we met on, you know, playing this game and everything's good. So there is that. I feel like more recently, more of the technology predators where they're hiding behind the screen and like they said all of the right things. We had a lot in common, and the ones that are really skilled know how to do it.
They're grooming.
Yes, very much. You know, they get on a game and they're, you know, my mom grounded me and I'm upset with this. And then they have this, you know, like, oh, like, you know, tell me more about it. And they feel like, you know, they make it so that these kids can trust them. And then they feel like they're having this, you know, friendship or relationship. And then before you know it, it blows up into something.
Now, I want to talk. I heard this, and then the guy that we had on last week, I was talking to him, but I heard this comment, leave sleeping dogs where they lie. Just whatever happened in the past happened. Don't leave it alone. Just leave it alone. How incorrect is that?
Very. because it's one of those things that pain and that hurt, if it doesn't get resolved and you don't talk about it, it's literally eating you alive inside. And it can affect your physical health, your mental health. I feel like, you know, 20 years ago, or even my parents or grandparents probably would have said, it's in the past, leave it alone. We don't need to talk about it. But the fact is, we need to talk about it because of all of the issues that it could cause as adults, addiction, you know, and just physical health. Like, a lot of people don't really think about how that can physically affect them. And we say, like, your mental health is just as important as your physical health. Mm-hmm. You go to the doctor for your checkups if you don't feel well. Same works with your mental health. Don't just come when things are bad.
So okay. they had done a study a while back, and it was reported that, you know, as high as 85% of the prison population had disclosed that they had been abused as a child. I mean, if that's not a good enough statistic to get people to go, hey, you know, while on the surface you may feel like it's not affecting you, subconsciously it's there, and it's going to rear its ugly head in ways that you didn't even know were possible. And it's never too late to get help, ever.
Okay, so let's get some information about the organization, how to get in touch with you guys. Let's get that information right now.
Okay. So our agency has a website, childabusecouncil.org, where parents can go. We have a parenting resource tab. Talks about all of our programs, talks about our events. We also have a Child Abuse Council Facebook page and group. I'm sure you can find us in the Google system somewhere there. For some reason, when people Google CPS, they get our number. And that's not correct because we're not CPS. But they can certainly call us as well. But the best way to get in touch or just to even learn a little bit about what we do is to check out our website.
Okay. You guys have anything coming up? Any last words that you guys want to say? We really appreciate you. And you guys have an open invitation on the show.
Thank you. I would just say in closing that, you know, I really am thankful that you guys chose to tackle this head on. I'm sure this has happened to more of my staff than just me, but when I meet somebody new and they ask me where I work, I get one of two responses. One is, oh my gosh, how can you do that? You know, and the other one is they're like, oh, and they walk away. So, you know, whether I can understand that people may not want to deal with it, but guess what? It's here. And for those kids that are being abused, they need people to not turn a blind eye. So I really congratulate and I'm happy that you guys have chosen to talk about it in such an open forum.
Put that phone number back up again. Child Abuse Council, 231-728-6410. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Ladies, thank you so much, and we will have you on soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Child Abuse Council there. I wanted to introduce, put up that hashtag for me, please. What we want to do is that from now on, we want you guys to hashtag touched. Hashtag touched. TOUCHED. Okay. Whether you have gone through that experience or you feel sympathetic. And I want to thank my daughter Lisa for coming up with this. Yes. We have all had some type of experience of being touched by physical, emotionally, spiritual, sexually, or a combination along the way. How you interpret your experience and what you take away from that is your choice. By advocating for yourself, family, friends, and community, we can change the narrative on how our lives are touched. That's hashtag touched. And I need you to go and stand up for it. When I get off, this message will be on there, and I will be hashtag touching my, putting it on my Facebook sites as well. And we need you guys to spread the word about what we're talking about this week and this month, because it's a deep issue that affects our community. Pastor Burns.
You know, brother, I think about the last comment they said about when they say tell people where they work at, how people want to shy away. You know, this issue's here. And you say, either we ourselves or know somebody, related to somebody who's been a victim of abuse or been subject to abuse, but we don't want to talk about it. Like we've been saying, we don't want to talk about it. We don't want no people to deal with it. We don't want people to work with it. Somehow, like, it's contagious, you know, and man, we've got to change that mindset, you know. So hashtag touched. We know the stories, we've heard the stories, and, you know, it's time for us to change how we perceive these things, and how we talk about them.
Let me say this too. Maybe you're someone that didn't deal with this situation and you're hurting. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're out there hurting people. Listen, this is not a thing to slam. This is a thing to say that, you know, maybe you were hurt one time and you didn't get hurt, that you didn't get help. Okay. So we are trying, there are a lot of people that this is a generational curse with. They were hurt. Their grandmother were hurt. Their mother was hurt. And it's line after line after line. I got my DNA back. There's a reason why I'm 2% Irish, 2% Swedish, and 2% English. Okay, do I need to go into detail? Okay, there's a reason why that happened. And the thing is, unless we talk about these hard issues, they will never get corrected. And let me tell you, you right now know some child that is being molested, and you actually know that it's happening, but because of financial reasons or because of stigma or because of all kinds of things, you are choosing to do nothing at the expense of that child. We heard of a guy went to a very prominent a pastor and said to him that what was happening to him, and he was ignored. That can happen, people. It is affecting our children. It is affecting our youth, and it's affecting our adults. Pastor Burns, last word to you.
Hey, brother. If it looks right, if it doesn't seem right, it's probably not right. Say something.
That's it. Put that hashtag touched back up there. This is Turn It 2 for this 20th of January, 2023. Next week, the Hope Project, because we're going to keep this going because we want to help you. Go out, sow some seed. Some seeds. Not one seed. Go out, sow some many seeds of joy this week. Take care. God bless.
God bless.